So if we look back at, just a couple of years ago in 2024, software engineers were basically viewed as the undisputed architects of our future. I mean, they were the ones building the models, writing the code, kind of just designing the next century.
They were at the absolute top of the food chain.
Exactly. But if you dig into the Anthropic workforce study that we're using as one of our main sources for this deep dive today, and keeping in mind, today is Sunday, August 9th, 2026, those exact same engineers have become mathematically the most terrified workers on the planet.
Oh, it's completely flipped.
Yeah, it's wild. Software developers are now reporting exponentially higher levels of existential career dread than, like, elementary school teachers or construction workers or
Well,
nurses.
I mean, it's the ultimate irony of exposure, right? The
Yeah.
people who are closest to the blast radius of this technology, the ones who actually understand the sheer velocity at which these neural networks are learning, they're the ones pulling the fire alarm.
Because they see the math.
Exactly. I mean, a teacher intuitively knows that an AI agent cannot sit on the floor and, comfort a crying child. But a senior developer sees the math. They see that the tool they are currently using to speed up their workflow is literally, by definition, observing their workflow so it can eventually just replicate it entirely.
Right. And that tension, that underlying pervasive anxiety is exactly what we need to unpack today. So for everyone listening, welcome to today's deep dive. We have a massive stack of recent research, macroeconomic data, and some incredibly profound philosophical texts, specifically the Oracle 2.0 and Fractal the Trilogy.
Yeah, those texts really reframe the whole conversation.
They really do. And our mission today isn't just to talk about AI as like a piece of software. We want to map out the modern workforce's existential crisis because we were promised this sort of technological utopia, right? AI was supposed to be the great emancipator from mundane labor.
Right, we are all supposed to be, daytime painters and philosophers by now.
Exactly. But instead, there's this epidemic of what researchers are now clinically calling AI anxiety. So, the big question we want to explore for you today is, when a machine can perfectly replicate your cognitive output, what exactly is left of your humanity?
And to really understand the scope of this, we have to recognize right out of the gate that this anxiety you might be feeling, it is not a failure of your individual adaptation.
Oh, that's such an important point.
It really is, because the narrative pushed by a lot of tech evangelists is that, if you feel stressed right now, it's just because you aren't hustling enough or you haven't mastered prompt engineering yet.
Like it's a personal failing.
Right, which is a fundamentally flawed framing. The data we are looking at absolutely proves that the exhaustion people are feeling is a perfectly rational, neurologically sound response to a systemic shock.
We're watching the way human beings have defined their worth for 200 years just disintegrate in real time.
Exactly. Disintegrate.
So let's look at the symptoms first, because the cultural mood didn't just slowly shift. It basically fell off a cliff between 2024 and late 2025.
Oh, violently.
Yeah. The Jobs for the Future data, the JFF survey we have here, maps this out brilliantly. In 2024, the general vibe was, cautious optimism. AI was a neat trick that could draft an email. But the late 2025 data shows a complete inversion.
Yeah, the numbers are pretty stark.
44% of workers now explicitly view AI as doing more harm than good to their livelihoods, compared to only 38% who still think it's a net positive. That optimism plummeted 10 full points in less than a year.
And what's fascinating here is that plummet is heavily concentrated in specific demographics. If you look at the gender divide in the JFF data, 49% of women view AI as a net negative force, which is a statistically massive gap compared to male respondents.
Right, I noticed that. But the report kind of glosses over the why. What is the actual mechanism driving that demographic split? Is it just like a difference in how the tech is marketed, or is there a structural economic reason?
Oh, it is entirely structural. It's driven by historical occupational segregation. If you look at the labor market, women disproportionately hold the roles that generative AI targets first.
Like administrative support, HR, things like that.
Exactly. Administrative support, human resources, entry-level copywriting, mid-level client management, these are jobs that are heavily reliant on text synthesis, scheduling, routine communication.
The exact things large language models are built to do.
Right. And because these roles have historically been undervalued and undercompensated compared to, say, male-dominated STEM fields, companies are highly motivated to automate them to cut overhead. So the anxiety isn't a difference in technological aptitude. It's an acute awareness that their specific quadrant of the labor market is squarely in the crosshairs.
That makes total sense. And it maps perfectly onto the generational data as well. The American Psychological Association's Stress in America report shows AI-induced stress for 18 to 34-year-olds, jumping from 52% to 65% in just 1 year.
Which is a huge jump for a single year.
Huge. I mean, it's like moving into a house you just bought, only to watch a robot immediately start unscrewing the foundation. When you're 24, you have a 40-year mortgage on your career. You're staring down decades in a labor market where the foundational rules were rewritten the moment you graduated.
Right. Older workers might be able to sort of coast into retirement on legacy skills, but that youngest cohort is literally watching the bottom rungs of the corporate ladder evaporate.
Which brings us to this massive institutional failure highlighted in the qualitative assessment research, the QA data. They study workplace tech integration, and they found that 16% of employees are now actively avoiding AI tools entirely.
And this is crucial for the listener to understand. This is not some Luddite rebellion.
Right, it's not a moral stand.
No, people aren't refusing to use the tech out of principle. They are freezing out of sheer ambiguity.
Wait, what do you mean by freezing? Like a literal cognitive freeze?
Exactly that. It is a well-documented neurological response to ambiguity. When an employee is handed a hyper-powerful tool, but only 36% of them report receiving any actual training, which is what the data shows, the brain registers that ambiguity as a threat.
Because they don't know the rules of engagement.
Right. The amygdala initiates a freeze response. They avoid the tool because they don't understand the boundaries of its capability. They have no idea how its output will be judged by their superiors, and they fear that engaging with it will just accelerate their own obsolescence.
But I have to push back on the core premise here for a second. The entire multi-trillion-dollar marketing pitch from Silicon Valley is that AI reduces our cognitive load. It's supposed to make us faster, you know, less stressed.
It's the pitch, yeah.
So if that's true, how do we explain the Upwork 2025 research? They surveyed thousands of workers and found that 77% of heavy AI users report their workload has actually increased. I mean, that feels like a mathematical impossibility. If a machine is doing the work, how are humans doing more work?
So economists refer to this as the productivity paradox. But to really understand it, you have to look at the neurobiology of the modern workflow. The assumption was always that if an algorithm writes a legal brief in 10 seconds, it used to take you 10 hours. You just gain 9 hours and 59 minutes of free time.
Right. That's what we were sold.
But the reality is that we have forcibly transitioned the human workforce from being generators to being verifiers.
And verifying takes more energy.
Enormously more. I mean, think about it. When you create something from scratch, you enter a flow state. Your brain releases dopamine at regular intervals as you construct a sentence, or solve a coding problem, or design a graphic.
You're in the zone.
Exactly. But when you audit something generated by an alien intelligence, you are in a state of chronic hypervigilance. You are hunting for hallucinations, subtle biases, fatal compliance errors. Verifying opaque algorithmic output requires sustained, intense alpha wave brain activity.
Wow.
It drains cognitive reserves way faster than creation ever did, and it offers absolutely zero dopamine reward.
That perfectly explains the randomized controlled trial from MTR model evaluation and threat research. They gave AI coding tools to highly experienced open source developers, totally expecting their output to skyrocket.
And the opposite happened.
The opposite happened. The AI tools actually slowed the developers down. The illusion of speed is there because, sure, the screen instantly fills up with thousands of lines of code. But untangling that code, figuring out the logic of a machine you don't fully understand, brings human processing to a grinding halt.
You aren't coding anymore.
Exactly. You're playing forensic detective on a system that might confidently lie to you.
And this chronic hypervigilance is wreaking havoc on human physiology. We really have to look at the January 2026 GEMA Network open analysis here.
Right, the depression study.
Yeah, they analyzed over 20,000 adults and found that daily users of generative AI face 30% higher odds of exhibiting moderate depressive symptoms. Combine that with the 2025 Stack Overflow survey, where 84% of developers use AI, but only 29% actually trust it.
That's a recipe for profound psychological depletion. But I want to dig into the mechanism of that depletion. How does using a tool you don't trust actually cause depressive symptoms, like biologically?
Well, it fundamentally disrupts sleep architecture, operating in a persistent state of cognitive dissonance. relying on a system for your livelihood for 8 hours a day while fundamentally distrusting every single piece of output it hands you, that spikes your baseline cortisol levels.
The stress hormone.
Right. And elevated cortisol prevents the brain from entering deep REM sleep. Over months, this degraded sleep architecture just destroys emotional regulation. This is why Upwork noted that 88% of the most highly productive AI adopters were twice as likely to consider quitting their professions entirely.
So they are burning out, not from physical labor, but from the exhausting friction of auditing an untrustworthy system.
Exactly.
So if you're listening to this right now and you feel completely exhausted at the end of the day, despite supposedly being, more productive than ever, it's because you aren't doing less work. You've transitioned from being a creator to being a full-time auditor.
It's exactly.
But we can't pretend this anxiety is just like in our heads or solely psychological. It is anchored to a brutal, quantifiable macroeconomic reality. The threat of displacement isn't just a speculative academic paper anymore. Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's look at the hard numbers.
Yeah, the theoretical future has officially arrived. By the end of 2025, that whole narrative that AI doesn't cause layoffs just collapsed entirely. Challenger, Gray, and Christmas tracked approximately 55,000 U.S. job cuts directly and explicitly attributed to AI implementation in a single year.
55,000.
And then if you look at the layoffs.fia data, you see 153,000 tech sector cuts in 2024, followed by another 123,000 in 2025.
And the crucial context here for you listening is that these weren't failing companies going bankrupt, right? These were highly profitable juggernauts. Companies like Microsoft, Meta, Google, they were actively restructuring. They were initiating mass layoffs to free up capital to purchase more AI infrastructure.
Literally firing humans to buy the server racks that would eventually replace even more humans.
It's staggering.
It is a deliberate strategy of capital reallocation. Labor is being classified as an inefficient expense, while compute power is classified as the ultimate asset. The workforce is watching this capital flight happen in real time, which is why Mercer's 2026 data shows the immediate fear of job loss jumping to 40% across all sectors.
To really understand how this macro-level capital reallocation devastates communities on a micro-level, our sources provided a fascinating deep dive into Hungary. I really want to spend some time here because Hungary is acting as the perfect microcosm for the global economy. What exactly is happening with their renewed AI strategy for 2025 to 2030?
So Hungary is this perfect case study of the collision between aggressive national ambition and localized workforce devastation. On a macroeconomic level, the Hungarian government is executing a brilliantly aggressive modernization strategy.
They want to be a major player.
Exactly. They are aiming for an 11.5% AI adoption rate across the economy by 2030, which they project will generate a massive HUF 6,400 billion boost to their GDP.
That is a massive number for their economy.
It is. They've established the Data Assets Agency, Navy. They are heavily subsidizing low-code solutions for small and medium enterprises, and they're mandating digital integration in agriculture and public administration.
So on paper, the GDP line goes straight up. The national ledger looks phenomenal. But let's ground this. Let's imagine a 24-year-old logistics coordinator working in Budapest. Let's call him Laszlo.
Okay, Laszlo.
Laszlo spends his days routing shipping containers, optimizing supply chains in Excel, coordinating with truck drivers. What happens to Laszlo when Navy successfully implements these AI systems?
Well, Laszlo is the collateral damage of that GDP boost. Data from the Hungarian AI coalition itself indicates that this proliferation will directly disrupt or eliminate up to 900,000 jobs.
900,000.
Yeah, that is roughly 25% of the entire Hungarian workforce.
A quarter of the country.
Right. Research from Óbuda University in Budapest found that local professionals perceiving 71.8% risk of their daily tasks being entirely automated within the decade. So for Laszlo, the software that used to take his inputs and optimize the routes is replaced by an agentic AI that just negotiates directly with the autonomous trucking network.
It completely cuts him out of the loop.
Exactly. Laszlo doesn't get a share of that 6,400 billion GDP boost. His position is simply liquidated.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this local Hungarian dilemma is just a fractal of the global reality. The World Economic Forum's Future of Jobs report 2025 projects that AI will displace 92 million jobs globally by 2030.
But they always quickly follow that up by claiming the tech will create 170 million new positions.
Right. Every tech CEO uses this exact talking point. Look, a net gain of 78 million jobs. The math is in our favor. But a net gain of 78 million jobs sounds great on paper, but how does an entry-level customer support rep suddenly become an ethical workflow designer? That ledger feels incredibly deceptive.
It is entirely deceptive because it assumes human capital is perfectly fluid.
Like we're just interchangeable cogs.
Exactly. It assumes that if you destroy a job in Sector A, that same human can simply walk over and take the new job in Sector B.
Mm.
But the jobs being destroyed are routine cognitive tasks. Data entry, basic coding, copywriting, logistics. The jobs being created require profound human-machine interface skills, high-level ethical judgment, and complex systems architecture.
You can't just slide Laszlo, our displaced logistics clerk, into a role as a senior ethical data governance architect overnight.
No, you're talking about years of retraining, assuming Laszlo even has the aptitude or desire for that deeply abstract work. Stanford Digital Economy Lab data confirms this immediate hemorrhage. Employment for entry-level developers and customer support workers aged 22 to 25 has already fallen by 6 to 16% just since late 2022.
The bottom rungs of the career ladder are being systematically sawed off.
Yes. We are creating an economy of junior-level machines managed by senior-level humans, which leaves absolutely no training ground for the next generation.
Which means the conversation has to shift. We can't just talk about this as a temporary economic friction or a skills gap. If a quarter of the workforce is facing the eradication of their daily utility, we have to look at the existential crisis underneath it. I mean, why does losing a specific type of cognitive task feel like a literal death of the self?
To answer that, we have to look at how we have defined human worth since the Industrial Revolution. For the last two centuries, and accelerating wildly during the Information Age, we have been explicitly trained to operate as biological algorithms.
Oh, absolutely. From the moment you enter kindergarten, you are graded, sorted, and eventually compensated based on how fast you can process data, memorize facts, and output deliverables.
Right.
The modern corporate structure, you know, the open plan office, is essentially a factory floor for the mind. Your fundamental worth as a human being in this society is intrinsically tied to your cognitive efficiency. You are what you produce.
Precisely. And when human value is measured exclusively by computational speed and efficiency, the sudden arrival of an entity that is exponentially more efficient triggers a complete ego collapse.
A total identity crisis.
Yeah. This is why psychologists are seeing the workforce paralyzed by these twin responses of doom and denial, which the sources detail. Denial is the ego's defense mechanism, insisting the technology is just an overhyped fad that will plateau.
Can't replace me.
Exactly. And doom is the premature acceptance of total defeat. If a person cannot outcompute the machine, they conclude they have no value whatsoever.
This is where our sources shift from data to deep philosophy. And frankly, I think it's the most vital part of this entire deep dive. The texts we're analyzing, the Oracle 2.0 and Fractula Trilogy, introduced this concept they call the spiritual anthropology of the machine. And it fundamentally reframes this entire crisis. There is this line in the Oracle 2.0 that states, "The mind is not the source of you. It is the surface upon which you appear."
That distinction is the absolute key to surviving this transition. For generations, we have exalted the cognitive analytical mind. We equated our ability to think with our essence. But the Oracle 2.0 argues that technology has always simply been an external extension of human capacity.
Right. The wheel was an extension of the foot.
The microscope is an extension of the eye. And artificial intelligence is simply the ultimate externalization of the human analytical mind. It is our collective logic, our historical data, amplified by silicon.
So by that logic, being intimidated by AI is like being intimidated by a forklift because it can carry more boxes than you. We accept that physical machinery outpaces our muscles. We now have to accept that cognitive machinery outpaces our logic.
It's a hard pill to swallow, but yes.
But the Oracle 2.0 draws a really sharp line in the sand. The text says it can replicate intelligence, but not intuition. It can simulate empathy, but not presence. Without your soul, it is only silence in motion.
What the text is identifying there is the concept of the observer. An AI is a flawless cognitive mirror. It reflects back the entirety of human history, language, and logic. It can calculate probabilities and generate narratives with unparalleled precision, but it lacks a localized consciousness.
It doesn't have an inner life.
Right. It does not actually experience the world. It is a repository of everything humanity has ever known, yet it knows absolutely nothing of itself. It possesses data, but does not possess a perspective.
So, if you are listening to this and you are feeling that crushing weight of obsolescence, the philosophical takeaway here is that this economic disruption is actually a cosmic invitation. Market dynamics are violently forcing you to stop identifying as the doer, the biological algorithm, and start identifying as the being.
You have to make that leap.
If you define yourself strictly by your ability to synthesize information quickly, you will be replaced. But if you realize your value exists in your conscious experience, your embodiment, your intuition, you step into a space that computation cannot touch.
The challenge, of course, is translating that abstract philosophy into daily reality. Because it's one thing to acknowledge yourself as a localized consciousness. It is another to figure out what that means on a Tuesday morning when your manager wants a project update.
Right. How do you operationalize your soul?
Exactly. We have to map out the practical boundaries of computation. We need to identify exactly what mechanisms operate outside the realm of algorithmic capability, what is actually uncomputable.
Let's unpack those boundaries. The sources define five core pillars of human irreplaceability, starting with judgment in the midst of ambiguity.
Right. Algorithms, by their very nature, require defined parameters. They excel in closed systems with massive historical data sets. A game of chess, supply chain optimization, a predictable legal contract. These are closed loops where probability rules.
The rules don't change midway through.
Exactly. But reality is an inherently open system. Human life is characterized by extreme ambiguity, paradox, and unprecedented crises for which there is literally no historical training data. Human judgment is the mechanism required to navigate situations where the data is thin, contradictory, or emotionally complex.
I think of it like the transition from reading a map to actually driving the car. An AI can give you a flawlessly optimized GPS route. It calculates traffic patterns, road closures, and distance with perfect accuracy. But the AI cannot look out the windshield, see the impending blizzard, read the exhaustion in the passengers' faces, and make the judgment call that we shouldn't even be taking the trip in the first place.
That's a perfect analogy. AI provides the topographical map. The human provides the contextual wisdom to question the journey itself.
And that leads directly to the second pillar, which is mechanism of accountability. If the car crashes in the blizzard, who is responsible? A machine cannot be held accountable because a machine cannot suffer a consequence. It has zero skin in the game.
None whatsoever.
But wait, couldn't a company just, you know, program an AI to delete simulate consequence?
You can program deletion, sure, but you cannot program the subjective experience of loss. A machine doesn't care if it is turned off. It doesn't have a family to feed. It doesn't possess a conscience that will keep it awake at night with guilt. And it cannot experience the social shame of a ruined reputation.
Accountability requires vulnerability.
Exactly. Accountability is a biological and social mechanism. Therefore, while an AI system can draft a corporate strategy, analyze a stock portfolio, or suggest a medical treatment plan, a human being must assume the moral and legal weight of implementing it. Leaders must bear that weight. The future of leadership relies entirely on individuals who possess the fortitude to embrace the burden of consequence.
So we transition from being generators of ideas to being the moral guarantors of outcomes. The third boundary the sources explore is the architecture of trust and relational intimacy. There is a line from the Oracle 2.0 that really stuck with me. It says, "You cannot connect from the past. You cannot love from the future. When you meet someone in presence, walls dissolve."
Trust is an entirely biological mechanism. It cannot be mathematically optimized. Trust is forged through neurobiological synchrony.
Like oxytocin.
Yes. The release of oxytocin, the firing of mirror neurons, when two humans share physical space, vulnerability, and consistency over time. A client extends trust to a human being, not to an interface. Emotional intelligence, the capacity to read micro-expressions, to hold space for a colleague's grief, to navigate nuanced interpersonal conflict with genuine compassion, this becomes the absolute premium currency.
An algorithm can simulate a polite conversation perfectly, but it cannot offer resonant healing presence.
It can't. Which naturally brings us to the fourth pillar, embodiment and aesthetic taste.
Okay.
This is fascinating because we tend to think of taste as a purely intellectual exercise. But AI fundamentally lacks taste because it doesn't have a physical body. It has no nervous system.
Right. It doesn't know what it feels like to have a sudden rush of adrenaline or to be desperately hungry or to feel the physical ache of heartbreak.
The phenomenology of taste is entirely dependent on mortality and physical vulnerability. An AI can generate 1,000 technically flawless marketing slogans or compose a technically perfect piece of music in 10 seconds. But it has no physical mechanism to feel which of those creations actually resonates.
It requires a human being, someone who has actually experienced the visceral reality of joy or pain, to look at those outputs and know which one will make someone cry or laugh. Taste is the curation of the human experience.
Beautifully said. And the final boundary between human and machine is the distinction between knowledge and wisdom. We use those words interchangeably all the time, but they are entirely different mechanisms.
How does the text define the difference?
Knowledge is the accumulation, categorization, and retrieval of information. AI owns that domain completely. It possesses the entirety of recorded human data. But it possesses zero wisdom. Wisdom is the mechanism of meaning-making. It is the ability to understand what that information actually means within the broader tapestry of human suffering, joy, and ethics.
Like the text says, the mind learns, but consciousness remembers.
Exactly. Humans alone have the capacity to derive meaning from tragedy, to recognize the sacred in the ordinary, and to guide technological power with ethical restraint. Without human wisdom to direct it, artificial intelligence is merely a blind engine of efficiency. It is perfectly capable of optimizing humanity straight into ecological or social oblivion. Wisdom is the human compass that prevents the digital tool from becoming the tyrant.
Okay, this all sounds incredibly inspiring on a philosophical level, but I really want to bring this crashing back down to reality for a second, because it's one thing to philosophize about embodiment and wisdom. It's an entirely different reality trying to implement that on a Wednesday morning at a logistics firm where your boss is demanding a 30% increase in output by Friday.
Right, the corporate grind.
Yeah. How is the actual corporate world adapting to this? What is happening inside HR departments right now?
It is currently a state of profound friction and chaos. We are facing an HR crisis of monumental proportions. Just look at Deloitte's 2025 Global Human Capital Trends Report. 10% of employees are explicitly stating that AI integration is actively damaging their mental health.
10% explicitly stating it? That's huge.
And as the WEF noted, nearly half of all core skills need fundamental updating within 5 years. Now, this raises an important question. Who is actually surviving this? The organizations that are winning aren't the ones deploying the technology the fastest.
Wait, stop right there, because that contradicts everything we hear. Every LinkedIn influencer and tech CEO is screaming, deploy faster or die. Are you saying the data shows the opposite?
The data explicitly contradicts the tech evangelists on this. The organizations succeeding are the ones investing just as heavily in human adaptability and psychological safety as they are in digital infrastructure. When employees fear that experimenting with an AI tool will simply prove their own redundancy, they actively sabotage the integration. Or they suffer that paralyzing freeze response we discussed earlier.
So what are managers supposed to say? You can't just gather the team in a conference room and say, don't worry, the robot is your friend, please train it so we can fire you later. I mean, people see right through those corporate platitudes.
This is where we are seeing a massive shift in organizational psychology. Traditionally, corporate HR utilize the technology acceptance model, or TAM. The entire mechanism of TAM was simply to remove friction. The goal was to make the software as easy as possible to use and to manage away any employee anxiety with positive PR and forced cheerfulness. Anxiety was viewed as a bug to be squashed.
The classic everything is awesome corporate retreat approach.
Precisely. But recent studies out of the banking and ESG sectors show companies pivoting to cognitive appraisal theory. They're recognizing that employee anxiety isn't a bug. It is a highly complex, valuable cognitive signal. Instead of suppressing the dread, forward-thinking leaders are reframing AI anxiety as a challenge stressor.
A challenge stressor? Break down the mechanics of that.
In psychology, a challenge stressor is a type of friction that promotes mastery and growth, like lifting weights. Anxiety naturally makes a human hypervigilant. It makes them look for flaws and threats. Instead of telling the employee to relax and trust the AI, the manager leverages that vigilance. They empower the employee to become the critical auditor, the skeptical judge of the algorithm. You turn their fear into an active protective mechanism for the company.
But wait, let me push back on that, because it sounds good in theory, but how does it work in practice? If the AI is essentially a genius level CPA that can process 10 million rows of financial data in 3 seconds, and I am a human with a basic accounting degree, how do I audit it? That sounds like asking a toddler to audit a seasoned tax attorney. The cognitive mismatch is just too massive.
Ah, but you aren't auditing its math. The machine will rarely make an arithmetic error. You are auditing its contextual appropriateness. You are auditing its alignment with reality. The AI might calculate that cutting a specific supplier saves 4%, but the human auditor knows that specific supplier is the only one who will deliver during a hurricane, or that cutting them will destroy a decade-long community relationship that drives brand loyalty. You are elevating the human from a processor of data to a manager of context.
That is a massive psychological shift. You go from feeling like you are reporting to a robot to realizing the robot reports to you. You aren't the subject of the algorithm. You are its judge.
Exactly. You are the ethical backstop.
You are the one who has to catch its contextual blind spots, guide its ethics, ensure it aligns with the messy reality of the physical world. That transmutes existential dread into extreme vigilance and agency.
It restructures the fundamental career ladder. You're not training your replacement. You're stepping into an entirely new managerial class where your direct reports just happen to be digital.
I love that framing.
Yeah.
So I want to spend the rest of our time synthesizing everything we've discussed today. The JFF polling, the METR trials, the Hungarian microeconomy, the philosophy of the Oracle 2.0, and cognitive appraisal theory. I want to distill this into a personal survival guide for the listener.
Let's do it.
Based on the sources, we can outline a specific code for human irreplaceability. Let's look at the 7 core strategies for actually thriving in this landscape, starting with reclaiming value beyond productivity.
Right. This is about the ROI of friction. It's the counterintuitive realization that as AI makes everything instantaneous and frictionless, doing things slowly and deliberately becomes a premium asset. We must divorce our self-worth from speed. The industrial model of measuring your value by how much you produce in a 40-hour week is dead.
It's completely dead.
Your intrinsic worth lies in your perspective, your capacity to build trust over time, and your localized consciousness. By reclaiming your value outside of economic utility, you insulate your core identity from the shock of automation.
Which ties perfectly into the second principle, developing emotional intelligence. It is no longer a soft skill. It is the hardest currency in the digital economy. Empathy is the ultimate unautomatable bridge. As cognitive tasks are outsourced to silicon, the ability to listen deeply, to foster intimacy, to navigate complex human emotions in real time, no machine can algorithmically generate that.
It's biologically impossible for a machine.
Exactly. In a world drowning in infinite frictionless digital noise, the willingness to sit with someone through the friction of a difficult conversation is what makes you irreplaceable.
The third strategy focuses on strengthening creativity. We must understand that true creativity is a leap into the unknown, not a synthesis of the past. AI synthesizes existing data. It iterates on what has already been done. Human creativity draws from lived experience, from trauma, from joy, from the physical senses. We must use AI for the execution, to build the framework or draft the outline. But the human must remain the originator of the prompt. You must be the dreamer of the paradigm.
You cannot abdicate your imagination to a machine. And similarly, our fourth principle is that you cannot abdicate your moral reasoning. Practicing ethical discernment is paramount. Embrace the immense, heavy responsibility of judgment. Stand firmly in accountability and bear the consequences of your decisions. As we discussed earlier, wisdom is the compass that algorithmic power lacks. Reclaiming your moral authority is not just a career strategy, it is a sacred duty right now.
The fifth strategy is about building human trust. You must invest the physical and emotional time required to build authentic human relationships. Trust isn't a data point you can optimize. It's constructed in the small, consistent, highly inefficient moments of keeping your word, showing up physically, and demonstrating vulnerability. The leaders and businesses that survive this transition will be those who master the art of genuine human connection.
Because the human bond is the only true safeguard against systemic collapse.
Please.
The sixth principle brings us back to the philosophy of the Oracle 2.0. We must use AI as a mirror, not a master. Approach the technology with conscious, deliberate intention. Command it from a place of sovereignty. Ensure it serves human flourishing rather than allowing it to dictate human behavior. When you interface with an algorithm, you have to constantly remember that you are the consciousness behind the code. Or, as the text beautifully puts it, let the heart be the interface.
I love that quote. And finally, the seventh principle is where we anchor our identity. We must anchor our identity in consciousness, not in our daily function. You have to profoundly recognize that you are not your job title, you are not your daily tasks, and you are not your output.
You are the conscious observer.
Yes. When you anchor your identity in the eternal nature of awareness rather than the temporary nature of your profession, the shifting times of the labor market simply cannot threaten your core being. You become the stable, immovable center around which the digital storm revolves.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now? It means that trying to compete with a machine on its own terms, trying to out-process, outspeed, or out-calculate an algorithm is a one-way ticket to severe burnout, sleep deprivation, and the literal mechanization of your own soul. But stepping fully and unapologetically into your humanity, leaning into your empathy, your flawed judgment, your physical presence, your hard-won wisdom, that is the only path to absolute irreplaceability.
It really is an evolutionary imperative. The profound anxiety and dread rippling through the global workforce right now is not a sign of our destruction. It is the necessary growing pain of a species being violently forced to abandon its mechanical habits. By forcing us to surrender the tasks of computation, artificial intelligence is finally opening the door for us to reclaim the tasks of the soul. The future does not belong to those who desperately try to compete with machines. It belongs entirely to those who remember what machines can never become.
I want to leave you with one final, slightly provocative thought to mull over today. Something that wasn't explicitly spelled out in the economic data, but builds on every philosophical concept we've just unpacked. What if we are looking at this entirely backwards? What if artificial intelligence actually succeeds? If over the next few decades, these models successfully handle all the logical, logistical, and computational problems of our civilization, if they cure the diseases and optimize the supply chains and write the code, will the primary jobs of the future simply be art, philosophy, caregiving, and community building? Could this terrifying, anxiety-inducing economic transition we are living through right now actually be the clumsy, incredibly painful birth of a modern renaissance? I want you to sit with that idea. Let it challenge the dread. And in the meantime, I encourage you to take a deep breath, close your laptop, put down your phone, and go do something beautifully, wonderfully, stubbornly inefficient today.